97.1 FM Talk Podcast. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
We call my plan Bidenomics. Guess what?
It's working.
I will say that there have been so many accomplishments under this administration, it can be difficult to list them in a distilled way.
I do not hate anyone. So I say this gently. The Biden administration sucks.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
You know, we're going to have to change some of these up pretty quick, no matter who wins this election. I'm going to miss that one from Senator Kennedy for sure, because he's one of my favorites. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're all back together here for a Monday edition of the show. I know Sue had off on Friday as well. How are you?
I'm well. How was your day off?
It was good. I'll give you the deer hunting update here in a second as we all gather here in the studio. Fred is here. Did you survive Friday, Fred?
I did. Ryan Recker and I were here. Ethan was here.
Did you do Sue's News on Friday?
I did.
Nice.
I
good.
Did.
Thank you, Fred.
Fred
You're
gets
welcome.
Really excited when we're not here. We all love it when you know, the team is not together. But unfortunately, so, you know, here's what happens. I'm going to tell you. I know my audience. You're my audience. Fred is my audience. So I sent Fred a picture. I did not send you a picture from the woods with Alexa. But I had to take Friday off because I totally screwed up the dates. And there was this special deer hunting doe-only weekend in many counties across the state. I don't think it was statewide, but Howard County, where I hunt, it certainly applied. And my hunting mentor and dear friend Kevin Yeager has lots of grandkids, and they do this youth hunt in a few weeks. But the grandkids are kind of there at the farm for that. So he was very generous in affording Alexa the opportunity to come up on Friday and Saturday, if needed, to try to shoot a deer. Now, I want to mention this, Sue. I've never pushed this at all. I brought my daughter to deer camp for, I don't know, 5 years at this point. She loves it. She gets to play with the kids. She's never been risk averse to the blood and guts. And she's the one that earlier this year said, I want to shoot a deer this year. I said, okay. And I didn't believe it. And I kept not believing it until what happened this weekend. So she's been kind of the driving factor of all this. And my friend who I mentioned, I've hunted with him for 3 decades now, and he and his group of friends were very generous. I was the last person that was grandfathered into their deer camp that's not a family member, because now you have sons-in-law and stuff like that. So I'm real close with the Yeager clan, and Kevin loves working with kids. So anyway, Alexa shot the gun a few weeks ago. We get out into Howard County on Friday. We go into the deer stand about 3:30. By about 4:30, she says, why couldn't we have just gotten into the deer stand at 4:30 if we're going to be here until 6:30? Because she's kind of a thinking person. And it's tough to be in a deer stand when you're not seeing a lot, yeah. Sue, if you're a little kid. But she paid her dues, and here's what happened. We saw one deer on Friday afternoon, and it was right as it was getting to dark. So it was probably around 6:30. Now, as I mentioned, you can't shoot bucks. Right, it was a doe-only season. We had a really, really nice shooter buck. If Dad sees him from this location in a few weeks, I don't think I'm going to let it go. But it sat and taunted us for like 7 or 8 minutes, just looking at us. It kind of was almost. It's like they know. And for those people who hunt out there, you know what I'm talking about. Because he's just looking at us. He knew we were there, and the gun is, you know, kind of sticking out the stand and just munching on some grass and some wheat and stuff like that, and then finally decided to walk away. So Alexa's got the sights on it, and she even says, I'm like, oh, man, I could get this one. I'm like, yeah, well, you can't. So nothing happened. Then we go in on Friday night. We get up Saturday morning. I wish I was going to make the next part of this story up, but I'm not. It's 6:15 on Saturday morning. We're about to walk into the woods, and my daughter, before we leave the cabin, has to do her skincare. She's 9 and a half. She's got skincare that she's doing at 6:15 before she... Yeah, Fred, you look confused right
yeah.
now. I don't know how to explain that any better than she's got these lotions and stuff. I don't know why she needs this, but her and her friends are doing... Of course not.
Of course.
So she does her skincare. We get out
younger
there.
Skin.
Yes. Well, I told Jane that story today. She goes, I should have done that when I was 9. I'm like, no, I don't think it really matters. I think that, you know, she'll be fine. But this is her thing right now. So we get out there, and there was lots of action on Saturday morning. First thing we saw was another buck kind of, you know, slinking across the field. And then we saw some does, and she was able to shoot at one that we thought she hit, and I think she might have missed on that one. And then the second time, she actually got a little button buck. You can shoot a button buck because you can't tell if it's a buck. It's got little nubs on its head, and we tend to avoid to do that if you can help it, because then it doesn't grow into a big buck. But she got her first deer on Saturday in Howard County, and I was very proud of her. She did great. She would not allow us to do blood on her cheeks. I was a little disappointed in that for her first deer.
Good.
A skin treatment.
Good for her.
Well, that would have been an extra skin. Oh, come on, Sue. You know,
come on,
you can have a little fun with it. She probably would have done it if we would have pushed it a little bit more.
When you sent me the picture, my first response was, you know, well, congratulations, but how did she react? Because I thought maybe there'd be like some remorse or some like, ooh, I really didn't want to do this.
No, she was great. She, you know, this is what I think a lot of people, and I'm not trying to tell anyone out there that you should do this if you don't want to hunt, but if you've never, you know, tooled around on a four-wheeler looking for raccoons that you've trapped, you really are depriving yourself of a lot of fun in life, because that's the type of thing that we did after we hunted. She's been great around all this stuff. She didn't want to shoot the raccoon that was in the trap, and I, you know, give her credit for that. But I'm happy because, and this is nothing against my childhood. My mom and dad might be listening here this afternoon, but I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and then the suburbs of St. Louis, West St. Louis County. I may have fished a couple of times with like a cane pole or something like that. I never was in the outdoors outside of the farm that I worked on when I was a kid in Aurora, near Aurora, Illinois. So I've taken my kids to Howard County, exposed them to some fun stuff outdoors now for years. My boys never really took to it, and that's fine too. But she really is. And I think there's something to be said for this, because it would be my wish that you'd have more people out there that at least could experience what happens on a weekend like that. Because it's not just about killing and shooting the deer. Okay, there's a lot more to it. And those of you who hunt and you have deer camps out there, you know exactly, you know, what goes on. And then we also, you know, fill the freezer. And I made some delicious deer tenderloins on the grill, soaked in teriyaki last night, wrapped in bacon. It was delicious. And then I tried to bring, well, it was a pretty small deer, but I'm trying to make some sausage because that's what Alexa likes. And I tried to go to G&W off of King's Highway today, and they're closed on Monday. So
it's a holiday, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't
but I don't think
Columbus
a lot of
Day?
I don't think a lot of stores would close down for Indigenous Peoples Day, would they?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
You know, when I was driving into work today, I heard them on the radio say, "And if we're, you know, the holiday today," and I stopped for a second. I thought,
"What
am
holiday?
I going into work on a holiday?"
All right,
I did
this
wrong.
My son, who's the teacher in Chicago, he has today off. We get Veterans Day off in a few weeks, but we don't have today off. This is pretty good. I think it was Libs of TikTok who put this up on their site on Twitter. And I retweeted this earlier. Columbus is evil. He stole the land. Therefore, we no longer celebrate him. Instead, we celebrate Stone Age tribes that ate people, sacrificed children, and stole the land as well. Right? That's what we do now in this country. By the way, listen to Kamala on Indigenous Peoples Day. This is great, too, because I want more of this stuff to get out there.
People did not want to deal and accept and, most importantly, admit that we are the scene of a crime when it comes to what we did with slavery and Jim Crow and institutionalized racism in this country.
Yeah, and then she gets to the Indigenous Peoples Day, and I don't know how that's playing for Kamala right now, because things are not going well for her in the polls. Now, who watched Saturday Night Live? Fred, did you watch it over the weekend?
I did not, no.
Sue, did you see it?
No, but is it too much to hope that we'd have two funny shows in a row?
No, and I think I did not pay attention to what happened last, because I think they did some of this last Saturday as well. But they did it again, the cold open. I was watching football yesterday and thought, you know what, I'm going to have to see what they did. So during one of the half times, I pulled it up, and it was pretty good. Now, the one thing that I will tell you is it's almost like a tale of two comedy bits to a certain extent. Let me see if I can play this, because now I can't find it in here. Fred, do you know what I labeled that by any chance? Or is Ethan out there? Because I cannot find anything that says Saturday Night. There it is. Okay. This is only a small sample of it, right? And what they did here is, I got it. Don't worry about it. They did the, have you ever seen them do the Family Feud?
Yeah. Oh, I love Family Feud. Please tell me Keenan was the host.
So you had Keenan as the host. And then I don't know who the guy is that's playing Trump. He's awful, right? Then they had somebody playing Donald Trump Jr. I think it was Mikey Day. That's his name. And then they had the Asian dude on there, who's not funny at all, playing J.D. Vance. And it just doesn't work at all. Now, on the other side of the feud, They have Maya Rudolph playing Kamala. Brilliant. Brilliant. It's hard to tell the two apart, quite honestly. Andy Samberg playing Doug Emhoff, her husband. Really, really good. Gaffigan back as, you know, Walls, and he was great. And then Dana Carvey just killing it again as Biden. Hang on a second here. Something is happening to my audio today. And can you even hear that? I don't know what's going on. Unfortunately, Ethan was in here during the previous show, and I got audio that's not at proper levels whatsoever. So I think I'm going to have to fix that and see if I can play it to you later, because that I cannot hear. Could you hear that?
A little.
Okay.
A little.
Should I try it again?
Yeah, try to.
All right, let's see here.
Okay, 100 people surveyed, top six answers on the board.
No, I can't hear that. No, that's terrible. All right, so I don't know what's going on with that. I'm going to have to figure it out, unfortunately. But we'll move along here, and I'll get to some other stuff, and hopefully we can fix that here in a little bit. We got Jeff Murdoch coming up here. He is the White House correspondent for the Washington Times, and we're going to hook up with him and see exactly where we might be with this race right now. I have, there's a couple of things that I want to do after Sue's News this afternoon, and I haven't decided which one to do, because I was, and I don't often do this, Sue, but I was watching football yesterday. I wasn't as engaged in some of the games, so I started popping around maybe some of the work that I usually would do on a Monday morning, and I found two columns that were fascinating. One of them was from a former mentor, of mine, and one of the guys that really treated me very well in Milwaukee. His name is Charlie Sykes. Now, Charlie became one of the lead never-Trumpers in the nation. He started a publication. He quit talk radio. He was in Milwaukee for a long time. Did a television show that I also was a guest on, and Paul Ryan and Ryan Priebus, and I hosted that show when Charlie wasn't there. And he was a staunch conservative talk show host in Milwaukee for decades. Like, one of the biggest names in Milwaukee. There's another guy named Mark Belling who still does it as well. So in the spring of 2016, Sykes interviewed Trump. He had Trump, Wisconsin, big state, obviously, then. He won it, ended up winning it, Trump. But Charlie actually pushed back and asked him some pretty hard questions, and those questions went viral. And Sykes made it very apparent from the very beginning that he didn't like Trump. He didn't like anything that it was all about. Now, Charlie Sykes has always described himself as a reformed liberal, because back when he was younger, he was a lefty. Then he became conservative. And I'm not criticizing his career track, because he's been very successful. But what happened yesterday afternoon is I saw a column that he wrote on the Bulwark, and it's all about, this is what the Never Trumpers do. It's like, Trump's a fascist. He's a fascist. Fascism. Like, stop it. Okay? Would you guys stop it? It's ridiculous. So then on the other side of the equation, I'm popping around. I see a column from Sasha Stone. I've told people about Sasha before. And this was like, both of these columns could not be more aligned in a certain way, but more opposite one another. Because Charlie was a conservative when I knew him, and had a big, big, strong conservative voice in Wisconsin for a long time. And Sasha Stone, someone who I knew a little bit out in L.A., had this website, which is an Oscar Academy Awards handicapping site, and it's called awardsdaily.com. And she was rabidly, rabidly left, hated George W. Bush, hated everything about Republicans. But then something weird happened after 2016. And this is in the era of the Twitter files and Matt Taibbi and some of the other things that went on there with Mike Schellenberger, exposing the nonsense that went on, in particular with some of the social media sites. And that's what Taibbi turned into the Twitter files. And Sasha has done exactly the same thing that Charlie Sykes has done, but in the complete opposite direction. So while the one side, the Never Trumpers, are like, oh, and this is like, you got to keep in mind that this is the Liz Cheney crew, okay? And Liz Cheney just makes me want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. If she doesn't like Trump, that's fine, okay? There's a lot of people that don't like Trump. Keep your big flap shut. She's out there campaigning for Kamala Harris? No. We have no room for that. It's one thing you want to sit it out. You don't like Trump, but she's an embarrassment. And this is what the Never Trumpers have kind of become. They really have. Now, Sasha, on the other hand, and I'll read from some of her column either today or tomorrow, couldn't be more fearful of what's actually happening out there and the way that, you know, media clamped down on this information that they claim was misinformation. A lot of it's because of COVID. I mean, this kind of came full circle for a lot of these people that were more libertarian on the left. I think I would put Sasha in that category. I certainly put Bill Maher in that category as well. But they were horrified, and justifiably so, about some of the things that we did as a government during, you know, that period of the pandemic. All right. I think I still have We got a couple of new ones. Are those new, Ethan, or are they not?
It's loud enough.
All right, let's see if it's the same cut. Let's see if we can get to it here.
Okay, 100 people surveyed, top six answers on the board. Name something that you keep in your glove compartment. Oh, VP Harris.
Steve, look. I was raised in a middle-class family.
Right? Oh, here we go.
Perfect.
My mother raised my sister and me, mm-hmm. all right? Yeah. She worked hard and saved up.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And we had a second mother, too.
Okay. Did that mother have a glove compartment?
A small business owner named Miss Shelton.
Okay, we got that. Something that you keep in your glove compartment.
Oh, a Glock, Steve. A big old Glock.
So that was the number two answer. Now, I don't know if I have the second clip, so I don't think I do. So then Doug Emhoff, Andy Samberg, we have to find this. Ethan's going to find it. We'll do it for Audio Cut of the Day. What do you keep in your glove box? He says a second gun, and that was the number one answer. It was actually pretty funny. that's the number one answer. So then they get to Walls here, Jim Gaffigan.
Let's go over to Tim Walls. Okay, something that you keep in your glove compartment.
This is right in my wheelhouse, in my glove box. I got hot hands, napkins from Runza, and gotta have Tums in case I eat something spicy like tomato.
If you say so, show me some white nonsense.
Show me some white nonsense. So it was, but I told Ethan to pull some of the stuff on the other side because it wasn't funny at all. The audience was laughing hysterically. I, as an audience member at home on my couch, was laughing by myself in my living room out loud at that bit. But then they go to the Trump side and it was just flat. How they don't understand how uneven it is. And then here's the other thing about this. How would you like to be like a current cast member? The only two current cast members they had in that whole thing. Well, I guess Keenan is, right? Yeah. But the dude playing J.D. Vance, the Asian dude, have no idea who he is. And Mikey Day. Everyone else in there is not a cast member. And they're better than the current cast members. So they're bringing back veteran funny cast members. People who actually make people laugh. Lorne Michaels. And aren't you kind of exposing to the country that your current cast sucks ass in a way?
A little bit.
I think so. Anyway, we'll get more of that audio to dazzle you with. I got a bunch of other stuff here. We got Jeff Mordock from the Washington Times coming up. Hang in there, Monday edition of the show. Monday afternoon on the Mark Reardon Show. We're all back together. Sue will have Sue's news in the next hour. I'll have, I just told you about these two columns, but there's also some really, really good audio from Bill Maher's show where he just, Sue, I'll ask you a question. I don't think, maybe you don't know who this person is, but she's become very popular with the kids out there. Chapel Roan, you know who she is?
Yeah, the singer.
Yeah, okay, so you know who she is.
Uh-huh.
All right, I don't know how many people knew her, but she did something that caught Mr. Maher's attention, and he smacked her down so good it was almost unfair. And I'll get to that. That's kind of lengthy audio, so I need some time for that. We have Cusumano coming up this afternoon as well. The Tigers won on Saturday. They needed to. That was good. Oh, Illinois ended up winning in sort of miraculous fashion over the weekend, which is always good if you can do that. I think they won because they were playing Purdue. I was back and forth. Now I'm second guessing that, Sue, because my brain is not functioning. But
that's fair.
Purdue, as I remember it, Purdue went for two and they didn't get it. It was overtime and the Illini escaped with a victory. But Frank will be here at 4:45. We got Andy Puzder in the 5 o'clock hour talking about the economy, plus an audio cut of the day and war. Right now, Jeff Wardock is back with us, White House correspondent for the Washington Times. Jeff, how are you? Welcome back. Happy Monday to you.
How are you? There's kind of a cross feed going on. Now I think I can hear you.
Is it better now?
It's much better now. Yeah, there was another audio going on, but you sound perfectly clear.
Okay,
so, but
yeah, well, it's a Monday, and I'm discovering that there's some little kinks that we're working out here on this Monday afternoon. So how are you doing? And let me get your opinion on just this. I addressed this in the monologue. So we learned today that Kamala Harris is going to sit down for an interview with Bret Baier from Fox. That doesn't make sense to me if you're a Harris supporter or running her campaign. How is that a win potentially for her?
Well, it's a win potentially for her because I think she knows that her campaign is starting to fall into problems.
Yeah.
I don't want to go say the wheels are coming off. It might be a little too premature to say that, but she's running into a lot of problems. And this is a move you do when your internal polling says you're behind and you need to reach out and you need to do something different. And that's how I read this, that I think the internal polls are a lot worse than what we're seeing, and she feels she needs to throw out a Hail Mary, and this is this is what she's going to do.
It's my sense that one of the problem areas right now, I mean, Pennsylvania is where I think even both candidates are today, so we know how important, you know, Pennsylvania is. But look, there's polling, and you've probably seen it, Jeff, out of Wisconsin and Michigan, that probably has those Democrats pretty worried, not only about which way the states tip in the presidential race, but in those two important Senate races as well.
That's exactly right. And if she's, and this is true of any candidate, especially with the vice president, if they're starting to struggle, you're going to start to see that struggle go down ballot. That just happens regardless of candidates. And we're starting to see her struggle, and the Democrats are starting to panic because they know that's going to influence down ballot. And it's amazing to see a short span just to click off a couple of things we've seen in the past 48 hours that are showing that the wheels are starting to come off. They sent Clinton down to Georgia. Nobody knew who he was. Then he accidentally, you know, basically condemns the Biden-Harris immigration policy. You've got this plagiarism scandal that's brewing, which is going to flock everybody else to look at everything she's ever written. You've got polling coming on that's showing that Trump is starting to pull ahead of her in some swing states. I mean, this is a campaign that really is starting to show a lot of problems right now.
So, Jeff, you mentioned, let me play the audio from Bill Clinton, who's down there, and he's wearing the camo, you know, Harris Walls hat, talking about immigration.
You had a case in Georgia not very long ago, didn't you? They made an ad about a young woman who'd been killed by an immigrant. Yeah, well, if they'd all been properly vetted, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Two observations. One, Bill Clinton looks about 15 years older than he really is. Two, he goes on to say, I should point out, he does go on to say, look, if they would have fixed this, you know, in Congress, we wouldn't have issues like this. People would be better vetted. But you can't tell me, Jeff, that that's not going to be flipped around what he said right there and put in a campaign ad for Trump and Vance.
Oh, he handed him a campaign ad.
Yeah.
I mean, he absolutely handed him a campaign ad. And on top of that, the thing that I think is important, that he went down there and people thought he was Joe Biden. Nobody knew who he was. And I think that really is problems, because the Harris campaign is really betting right now on Obama and Clinton. And that's what they keep saying. We're going to overdrive with Obama and Clinton. And you send Clinton down there. One, he stumbles into a mistake that gives Trump a campaign ad. And two, nobody knows who he is. You've now neutralized one of what the Harris campaign thinks is one of their big guns. And that's a real worry for them.
You know, when I was checking out the audio from Bill Clinton, before I listened to the audio, it was on the X formerly Twitter, and I saw him, and honest to God, Jeff, I didn't know who it was. It took me a second. Then the voice, you can hear he was laboring with his voice, but wow, I hadn't seen Bill Clinton in a while in that setting, and he seemed a little unstable in a Joe Biden way, if you will, with his age. So on the White House front right now, you know, one question for you is, and this keeps coming up, and I find it hilarious. I'm going to highlight this here in a few minutes, the way that the press is really pressing here with Trump and J.D. Vance. They didn't really want to ask any of those questions when Biden was on his last legs and should not have been running the show in the White House. So I guess the question now is, who's running the show in the White House? We're seeing him out there a little bit. He actually plays into the Republicans' hands last week because he tosses a pretty big compliment to Ron DeSantis when his vice president is ripping Ron DeSantis, and DeSantis kind of smoked her. So who is running the show right now? Are they not worried about that, Jeff? It's all about the campaign.
They're not worried about that. It's all about the campaign. I mean, the question has been asked repeatedly to this White House. Who is running the show? They say Joe Biden. You ask the question, a missile's coming to America at 3 a.m. Who handles it? The answer is the president has a team. That doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, but that is the answer to your question. So it's a team. It's people. It's, you know, wonks and political science majors and all of them who are really running the country. But I want to go back to what you're saying about him, about the President Biden throwing Harris under the bus when it comes to Ron DeSantis. That's the latest in a series of actions we've seen from Joe Biden that have really undermined the Harris campaign. She's supposed to go on in Michigan. He makes his first appearance ever in the White House briefing room. She's supposed to go on The View to announce one of her major policy initiatives to attract independent voters. He goes on at the same time to talk about the hurricane from the Roosevelt Room. It seems lately, and I'm guessing this has to be his frustration that the Democrats, and in particular the Harris campaign, has sort of brushed him off and died. And he was on after midnight at the Democratic convention. I have to believe all this is his frustration boiling over. But it's really something to see how much he has tried to overshadow the Harris campaign in the last couple of weeks.
Well, and some of that reporting is from Axios, right? So it's not like there's a conservative outlet that's alleging these things, but there does seem to be a little, I don't know if it's sabotage or not. That seems rather extreme to use that word, but people are noticing, suffice it to say.
People are noticing, and it may not be sabotage. There may be something, you know, it may just be frustration boiling over, but it's certainly, you know, he controls the time. One of the things I thought was interesting was she canceled all the stuff in Las Vegas about 2 weeks ago to fly back to do the FEMA briefing after Hurricane Helene. And, you know, she rearranged her schedule, does all this stuff, flies into FEMA, and then has to stand there and sit there and wait for 10 minutes so Joe Biden can give his briefing from the White House. And after you have the President of the United States standing at the podium with the presidential seal and the White House and all the trappings of that, for her to come on and then try to compete with that, you're not going to be able to. And yeah. I thought that really almost, the moment really overshadowed her.
Yeah, it was awkward.
It's awkward and it's hard to follow. It's why I don't like rebuttals to State of the Unions. I think you're always destined to fail with them because you're trying to compete with the President of the United States standing before Congress and the trappings of that. And it's the same situation here.
Jeff Murdoch, 3 weeks from tomorrow, we're getting closer here to Election Day, if people can actually get out and vote in some of these states. Appreciate your help again this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
The media and their questions have taken an interesting turn as well. I have some real-life examples from the Sunday morning shows coming up next. You know, a story I saw yesterday, Sue, that is not getting a lot of attention, but certainly it will resonate with you and me and Fred and anyone really who works in our building or anyone who works downtown. Now, I know those numbers have dwindled, but you see what happened early yesterday right here down by Stiefel?
No.
There was somebody that was run over and they went through. Well, someone was killed. This is the irony of it. Ran through a red light at 14th and Market. The person who ran through the red light crashed into another car. The person who was driving the other car is okay, but one of the women in the car that blew the red light is dead. Oh. It happened after 1 a.m., they say, at the intersection of Market and 14th Street, right next to the Stiefel Theater. This, by the way, has been an intersection that I have highlighted for 3 years now on this show as being dangerous, not only because of traffic, but because that's where people get shot by the homeless folks. Now, they've cleared the homeless folks out, but there was someone who was killed in that particular location about 8 months ago. In this situation, what I said on Twitter yesterday, Sue, and I think you would, you know, agree. This is the way I put it. When I leave work here at 6 o'clock, okay, I take 14th Street to Shoto. I take a right on Shoto, and then I take a left on, what would that be, Lafayette. And I go down to get to, not Lafayette, what would that be right there?
Where are you?
I go past Enterprise. I go to Shoto, right where the dilapidated, you know, gas station is that now is, I think, permanently closed down. And then I go on Shoto and take a left and get to the highway that way.
Yeah,
what the hell is the damn street?
Parkway.
By Ameren. Yeah. So my point is, there's never a time in the last probably couple of years that I've taken that trip and assumed that because I'm approaching a green light that someone will not come through a red light. Because I've seen it happen too many times.
Oh, yeah.
Over and over and over again, people run through these lights. And by the way, this happened at 1:30 in the morning. They do it at 1:30 in the afternoon. So it was not, sadly, shocking to me. It's very ironic that the person who blew the light is, you know, the car that had someone die. But that's what happens when you have no police presence downtown and people think there's no consequences. It's exactly what happens. And it's going to happen more on a regular basis because people know there's no consequences. So they run through these red lights and they don't think that they're going to get in trouble. And maybe this will resonate with somebody because somebody died in this particular situation. All right. The media is approaching this presidential ticket now in a very unique way. They're panicking. They're completely panicking. And you can hear it in their voices. I'm going to play you a few examples here because Martha Raddatz, and Martha's been one on ABC that has had at least the ability to ask the Harris team some tougher questions. And I've never had a big problem with Martha Raddatz as being like a biased reporter. But I think in this particular situation, the topic was, and we saw this video, I don't know, I think maybe 6 to 7 weeks ago, Sue. You remember Fox and other organizations were showing these Venezuelan mobs that have infiltrated these apartment complexes
Aurora, Colorado.
Right. It's not made up, right? You have video from the apartment, security video, that show horrifying things from these Venezuelan gangs. Well, Martha Raddatz and ABC decided, you know what? That's you guys are making way too much of people with guns banging down the doors of
what?
Other residents. That are, yeah. So listen to where this goes with J.D. Vance.
And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened.
Martha.
I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself?
Yeah.
Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border.
Put yourself in that situation. Thank you, J.D. Vance is right. Martha Raddatz decides to interject her opinion of this by saying, look, we spoke to the mayor, and they said that this was exaggerated. Well, J.D. Vance's point was, what happened? Okay, you're going to minimize what happened to these people when they were brutalized by these gangs. There is such a misunderstanding, a fundamental misunderstanding of the left in this country. And those of you who have friends that are on the left, or maybe you are on the left, you don't understand how this immigration issue is resonating with the American people. We are being invaded, and we don't like it. No other country on the planet would allow it to happen, and we don't want it to happen in this country. That's not bigoted. That's not racist. That's not xenophobic, because Black people and Hispanic people feel the same way. They went through the process. They became citizens legally, many Hispanics. They took the oath of office, or not the oath of office, the oath of citizenship at Busch Stadium a few weeks ago. We have been invaded. And you got people on, even some that are, you know, the Trump, the never Trumpers on the right saying, oh, this is horrifying language. They're playing into the worst instincts of the American people. No, they're playing into the instincts of the American people that feel like our country is not ours anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I got to hand it to Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, because here's a guy I've never really had too strong of an opinion on. He kind of gets into that, you know, McCarthy gets out. Mike Johnson's the guy. They immediately almost start talking about getting rid of him because he's not doing some of the things on spending that the more conservative members of Congress, Matt Gaetz, et cetera, feel. And he hasn't really played a major role in this presidential campaign, but he was on one of the Sunday shows yesterday, and I thought he handled himself extremely well. This is on Meet the Press with Kristen Welker.
Kamala Harris's numbers are dropping in the polls, and she just said in her own words, you saw the tape there, there is no difference between her and Joe Biden. The Biden policies, yeah. Bidenomics, all the things they champion are destroying the country, and everybody knows that.
So I think that Mike Johnson is right, but what you're going to hear here, and this is what you heard from Martha Raddatz, Kristen Welker, it's almost like the talking points go across to Meet the Press and George Stephanopoulos and everyone, except for Fox, of course. You know, Shannon's not getting the talking points that everyone else is. They're like, look, we got a problem here because this election looks like it's getting away from us. And one of the greatest lines, and I'll see if I can pull this, Sue, one of the greatest lines from the Saturday Night Live bit the other night was they kind of took a jab at Kamala in a way that I think that many Democrats feel, look, this guy, he's a horrible, reprehensible human being. He's a threat to democracy. He's all these things. And you're about to lose to him, right? How do you feel about that, right? How do you feel about, this is what I love with Jane, too. They have so much TDS out there that they can't see straight, and they don't understand that their candidate, and I think they do, because they just wanted Biden out, not because they wanted somebody else, but they knew he was going to lose to Trump, right? So Mike Johnson keeps going on here with Kristen Welker. She tries to push, but he doesn't. Excellent job.
That's why Donald Trump
we should note,
elected. Republicans are win the Senate and the House.
Mr. Speaker, we should note that FEMA funds were actually redirected on Donald Trump's watch to deal with the migrant issue. Let me ask you, you mentioned the medical.
No, ma'am.
Okay, so he's not having any of it.
Good.
This is what they do. They try to fact check only Trump. They never fact check the other side, and then they try to move on. He had nothing of it.
Wait a minute. Facts are important. That is a new program that started in 2020 under Joe Biden. That funding wasn't necessary under Trump's administration because we secured the border. We didn't invite illegal aliens and dangerous people into the country. That's a Biden-Harris policy, and everybody knows it.
Mr. Yes. Speaker, it did happen under Donald Trump's watch, but let me just ask you.
She tries again. She tries again, and he's telling her that no.
No, we didn't. No, Kristen.
Should Donald Trump release all of his medical records?
That is a brand new account.
Should Donald Trump release all of his medical records?
He has.
Speaker?
Now, this is where it gets real interesting. This is what I love. I don't know if I missed something on Friday. I left Thursday at 6 o'clock. I'm away for the weekend. This is going to make you laugh out loud. If you're drinking something, some coffee in the afternoon, some Diet Coke like I do, it might spit out your nose. Because listen to the case that she tries to make. All of a sudden, and this is why I said maybe I missed something, they're trying to hammer Trump on releasing medical records? Who the F cares? Listen to what she tries to make it about, and Johnson spikes the ball exceptionally well here.
He issued the records of his physicians. Kamala Harris issued her medical records as a diversion because she's desperate because she's sinking in the polls. Donald Trump's health is on display. Everyone in America can see it. The man works nonstop. He never quits. He probably sleeps 4 hours a night.
You know, we had a guy, legend here in St. Louis, Bob Hyland. I never met Mr. Hyland. Rand Camelwex was the vice president of CBS. But a lot of these high-functioning individuals, Hyland was in his office at like 4:30. He only slept 3-4 hours a night. Some people are like that. Trump is absolutely like that. So what Mike Johnson's saying is accurate.
He doesn't require as much sleep as the average person. He's an unusual figure. And this is the strength that we need in a time like this. We're in the most dangerous moment since World War II. You have to have strength. You have to have a steady hand. You have to have a commander-in-chief that our allies respect and our enemies fear. They do not fear Kamala Harris.
All right, so that was pretty good for Mike.
Yeah, really good.
But Kristen Welker can't get away from it. She can't get away. She's worried about President Trump's health, Sue. That's what it's all about.
Do fear Donald Trump.
Mr. Speaker,
that's what people are going to vote on.
Just be very clear. He hasn't released all of his medical records. He released two letters. Should he release the results of the cognitive test?
It's unnecessary. He's on display every minute.
So it's unnecessary. You can see that he didn't release his medical records. You don't want to know things like his cholesterol level, whether he's dealing with any issue that we may not
Wait
know about if he's going to be commander-in-chief.
Wait for
and
it.
He also said he would relieve cognitive
Kristen,
tests.
Listen to your question.
Yeah. Wait for it.
Should he release that?
The American people, Kristen, the American people don't care about the cholesterol level of Donald Trump. They care about the cost of living and the fact they cannot pay for groceries because Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's policies have put them in that situation.
I mean, he was holding back laughter.
Yes.
He wanted to laugh at I was laughing at Kristen Welker. How embarrassing is this? I mean, journalistic malpractice has been something that I have highlighted for my entire career as a talk radio host, but I never, ever thought it would be on steroids the way that it is right now. But you have examples of ABC and Martha Raddatz from yesterday morning. You got Kristen Welker doing the same thing. They cannot help themselves because they're panicked right now. You could hear it in their voices. They see these polls. They know that the Harris campaign is floundering and struggling. Now, I'm not going to call the election right now because that would be a mistake because we know that this is going to be close. But some things are cratering right now. And I think that there is an acknowledgement of it in some of the mainstream legacy media. And they're trying to do everything they can to try to fight back. But by going down a line of questioning with the Speaker of the House and trying to point out that Donald Trump has not released his cholesterol levels, when people can't afford to go to the grocery store, they can't get into a house, the American dream has kind of died along. Talk about tone deafness from this administration and from the legacy media. It's really something. It really is. And we'll continue to highlight that for the next 3 weeks. Coming up here at the top of the hour, Sue's going to have Sue's News. When we come back, I think I'm going to do the Bill Maher audio this afternoon because I had a couple of different directions.
Oh, good.
But he... And this is related to Chappell Roan, the singer, who has become somewhat of a sensation. I think she was on Saturday Night Live the opening weekend a few weeks ago. Or if she wasn't, she's going to be on the show because they always try to, you know, dial into the hot thing. But what Mr. Maher did on his show related to Israel and Chappell Roan is really, I said this yesterday when I tweeted it out, must-see TV. We'll get to that in the next hour. Plus, Cusimano, Andy Puzder at 5:07, former State Senator John Lamping. We're going to focus in on a state Senate race in the 15th District. David Gregory is the Republican in that race. We'll also cover the presidential stuff with John and an audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com. 971 FM Talk Podcast.
Monday afternoon, the whole team is together. We were not together on Friday. Sue and I were both off. We're back at it. Fred is here. He's glad to have us back, I think.
Oh, yeah, I am.
Glad to have
us back.
Yeah, I don't know that he said that, actually.
Yeah, I'm making a bit of an assumption there.
You're right.
You know, we have Sue's News coming up here. I have some amazing Bill Maher audio that you're going to want to hear, I promise. It's really one of the best Bill Maher monologues I've heard in a long time. We're gonna it's like 9 minutes, and I'm gonna call it down to like 3.5, and it's gonna be brilliant. You're gonna really enjoy that. And then we have Cusimano coming up a little later this afternoon as well. Andy Puzder in the next hour talking about the economy, and former Senator Lamping. Now, Sue, 10 years ago, in 2014, it was the summer of 2014 that my wife and I discovered that we were gonna have a baby, which was unplanned, as you might remember. And the quick story for people is my wife was bit by our neighbor's dog at the time. and went to urgent care. Wasn't super serious. Went to urgent care. The dog was friendly, just got a little excited, and was put on antibiotics. And then 6 weeks after that, it was July. It was very hot. She went for a run on this particular day. She came back. Her boobs were big. And I said, are you pregnant? And she said, well, I certainly hope not. And we went into total lockdown and denial. And then we welcomed, you know, what was going to happen. Now that little miracle is 9.5 years old.
Yeah.
But I bring that up because the summer of 2014 was the summer that I was starting to kick off a trip with listeners to go to Greece. And we were going to do that in the summer of 2025. That became, this is how we told my mom and dad.
You mean in 15 at the time?
I'm sorry, yeah, 2015. Yeah. So we go in 2014 to my mom and dad's house to tell them what is happening. And they were going to go to Greece with us. And we said, well, and I kind of, you know, phrased it that way. Well, I don't know if we can get a babysitter, you know, for 2 weeks in Greece. And that's sort of how we broke
how
the news.
How cute.
So I've been wanting to go to Greece for all these years. That was a trip that didn't happen. And this afternoon, we're going to make it happen. We're going to kick it off in April of last year, in 2023. I reconnected with my friend Mike Kenny. Mike took a group of listeners in 2011 with me to Italy. And we had a great time. It was the year that the Cardinals won the World Series. It was so much fun. We got back right when the Brewers were taking on the Cardinals. And everyone had it. In fact, we were with a bunch of people from Wisconsin, which was very unique because they had the Brewers, you know, we had fans of the Brewers, fans of the Cardinals, and we were all on the same bus giving each other trouble and stuff. But what really jumped and popped for me was this guy, Mike Kenny, because I had not had him as a tour guide before. He was working for a company called Holiday Vacations. He broke off on his own, and then for many years, he's like, Mark, let's do a trip together, let's do a trip. And finally, I said, yeah, let's go to Spain. I want to go back to Spain. I had been there in 1983. Well, this is the next trip we're rolling out. And if you go
that
to
is exciting.
DefineDestinations.com, this will be, and by the way, if you're interested, I'm going to want you to jump on this relatively quickly because this is not a big group that we're going to take along. The ship itself has 197 passengers, so under 200. This is not a big cruise ship. You start in Athens. There's a couple of nights there, and then you take this very, very small luxury liner across, you know, to visit the Greek islands. And the ship looks amazing. If you go to DefineDestinations.com, you can pull up the trip. I'll put this up on Twitter. Also, Mike's email address is up there, the phone number. He's in Italy right now because I was texting with him earlier, so he's probably getting ready to go to sleep in Rome right now. But we put this trip together, 7 nights aboard this cruise. It's like a 10-day trip. Day one, you go to Athens. We're going to fly right here out of St. Louis, and I think we go on Lufthansa again. I think that's how he's got the airfare arranged. And then we go over to Athens from there. So you got a couple of days in Athens, then through the Argolis region. You go through, and some of these things I can't pronounce at this point.
You go to Santiago with the white houses.
You go to Syros. You got to Amorgos. You go to Rhodes.
Yeah.
You go to Santorini. Is that it?
That's it. That's it. I'm sorry. I can't
Santorini,
say the right thing.
But see, I'm not good at
Look
this either.
Look how beautiful that is.
It says whitewashed in wonder.
Oh, that's the one.
That is day 9, May 5th. And by the way, I've already realized that I'm a huge winner by going on this trip because this trip will take me away from a trip to Louisville, Kentucky for the Kentucky Derby, which absolutely assures that I'm not going to blow a bunch of money.
How does
Louisville.
That absolutely? You will somehow figure out a way.
You might be right about that.
Yeah, I am right.
So this will be the 27th of April through the first week of May in the spring. It's a beautiful time. We come back on May 7th. The ship looks great. Mike is an astoundingly good tour guide. He really is. We had so much fun in Barcelona and Madrid, and maybe we can get some of the folks. In fact, I do have some of my friends. You know, my friend Rick from Vegas?
Yep.
He's in. My friends Fitz and Karen, and they went on the Spain trip. I think they're in.
Uncle Bob may go. We'll
Uncle
see.
Bob? That's yes. What, so explain Uncle Bob. This is hilarious.
Yeah, Uncle Bob is Michael's faux uncle, you know, good friends of the family type of deal. And Uncle Bob went on the last trip, unbeknownst to me, but he said he had a great time.
There was this awesome guy who was on the trip to Spain by himself, Bob.
Yeah.
And he was cool to hang out with. And then all of a sudden, he's at one of our fish fry events or something like that. And I'm like, wait a second. That's the guy that went to Spain with me. And Sue's related to him in a weird way.
Isn't that cute?
That's
Defined Destinations. You can always email me here at the station or hit me up on Twitter if you want details. This is going to be a fun trip. And it's very exclusive. So it's not like we're taking, you know, 40 listeners. I think we've got maybe 15 couples top.
Oh, wow.
And I already have like 3 of those filled. So,
okay.
You know, it's going to be a smaller, very unique trip. DefinedDestinations.com. We'll start talking about more here in the coming weeks.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to start off with a on this day in history for Fred, now that I know Sherlock Holmes is his other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Fred, on this day in history, 132 years ago in 1892, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was first published. It was the first collection of stories that Arthur Conan Doyle had been publishing in magazines in the previous 5 years. Isn't that cool?
That's really cool.
And that's 132 years ago today. Okay, I did not remember this story. 112 years ago today, in 1912, Theodore Roosevelt was shot in the chest in Milwaukee while campaigning for the presidency. Fortunately, the speech in his breast pocket that the men absorbed most of the bullet's impact, so he was able to go ahead with his scheduled appearance.
See?
What?
That was way before teleprompters.
It was.
If there was a teleprompter, he could have been shot and
That's
killed.
That's true. That is absolutely true.
That is crazy, though.
I know. I didn't know it either. Oh, I should have had Ethan pull this. But on this day in history, 39 years ago in 1985 was when Ozzy hit his go crazy. It's the left-handed home run in Game 5 of the NLC series, and the Cards won the game. That was 39 years ago. I remember that so well. It's frightening.
I hosted Wiggins America today for the Annie Fry Show.
Yes.
And I played that for
Did
the,
you? Oh, I love the, it. So it's in there somewhere.
Let me ask a question here. Let me ask a question just briefly here. Ethan's our new producer, right? Whose show do you produce? This one or the previous one?
That's a good question.
Are you working for this show or the other show?
That's a question
for the
bosses.
And you brought the audio to that show, not to this show.
That's a question for the bosses.
I'm just saying, priorities here. We're going to have some education.
Mom and Dad are fighting.
Google Trends. I do have some from this. Because 30 years ago today in 1994, I can't believe it's been 30 years since this movie debuted, if you can believe that. Just see if you can guess what this is, Fred.
I do know this.
Yes.
Here we go.
You know what they call a quarter pounder with cheese in Paris?
They don't call it a quarter pounder with cheese?
Oh, man, they got the metric system. They wouldn't know what the a quarter pound is.
What do they call it?
They call it Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right.
What do they call a Big Mac?
Big Mac's a Big Mac, but they call it Le Big Mac.
Le Big Mac. What do they call a Whopper?
I don't know. I didn't go on a Burger King.
That is so much fun.
Isn't it?
It is.
I actually had sent, there was a piece that was in Variety today about the 30th year anniversary, and I sent that to Fred because I thought we might have a fun conversation with my friend Dan Buffa, who's a film critic here. He's been a guest on the show many times. But that, you know, that's a, where are those movies? Where are the pulp fictions of the modern era? And I'm a huge fan of Quentin and that film. So we're going to spend some time maybe on this Friday looking back at that anniversary.
There were parts of that movie that I could not watch.
It's tough.
But
it's violent.
The parts that you could watch were awesome. Okay, Google Trends. All right, Google Trends released their annual collection of the top trending searches for this year's Halloween season. You know, they put out the other day what they guessed would be number one. Okay, well, that's not what happened. Here are the actual top six things that people are Googling. Number six would be Envy, Mark from Inside Out. Pomni from Amazing Digital Circus. What is that? Ethan, what is that?
Because I'm the young one here doesn't mean that I know.
Yeah, good
it,
answer.
Right?
I don't know what that is.
Do you know what that is?
I don't know.
Is?
Ethan would know for one of his other shows.
Oh, that is.
Yeah, not
Thank
here.
You, Fred,
That's right.
Taking a shot.
That's right.
Good job, Fred. That's why he's the Hall of Famer.
Oh, my gosh. Dolores from Beetlejuice. Catnap from the horror video game Poppy Playtime. But here's my favorite. Ray Gun. People want to go as the Australian breakdancer extraordinaire. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm actually a little surprised that we have not seen Ray Gun in like an ad or something like
that.
And I think she is now rated the number one in the world.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, she should be.
What do you mean the number one?
Number one breaker.
Well, that makes no sense.
She's ranked number one?
Yeah.
How could that be?
I feel like she should be taking advantage more so of how bad everyone thinks she is.
Right.
Yeah. Have fun with it.
I mean, yeah.
Embrace it. And number one is Shrunken Head Bob from Beetlejuice. And I've never seen it, so I have no idea what that means.
Say, I don't know if I knew more than one of those.
Well, we all know Ray Gun, so go with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, SpaceX. I tried to get you guys to watch
this. Can I just pause it? I'm just thinking about this because I'm an adult, so I don't dress up for Halloween. However, if you're looking for a unique you know, Halloween for a party, Halloween costume, ray gun would be perfect, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You wear some big white baggy pants, and I think that's a good costume.
Dance poorly.
Yes.
It's
sorry.
Easy.
I had to make that recommendation to the audience.
Very simple. That's fair. SpaceX was testing the rocket that Elon Musk wants to use to send people. First of all, he's going to send them back to the moon and then on to Mars. I mean, he is Elon Musk. And they tested this thing yesterday morning in South Texas. They launched an empty rocket for testing purposes. And the first, not yesterday, but a couple days before, in weeks past, four of them had not made it. So this was a big test. But for this one, SpaceX pulled off its giant chopsticks idea, and they caught their massive rocket booster in midair using these huge metal arms attached to a launch tower. It is really amazing to see. Fred watched it.
Oh, yeah.
I was pretty impressed. I didn't even know what I was watching, honestly. Yeah. I didn't know what I was watching this morning. I saw them play the clip, and I thought, you know what? That is pretty cool.
When I saw it the first time, I thought, oh, they're just playing the tape in reverse.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how amazing it is.
Thank you for saying that, Fred. Yeah. Because I didn't have the audio up when I was watching this morning. I'm like, what in the world is that? But that's pretty impressive.
I mean, to see that booster come back out of the sky and the thing go, wah.
It's like a, I don't know how much that thing weighs, but think of a drone, trying to land a drone that weighs 100 million pounds or whatever it is, right?
Back on the thing. It's almost like a giant Roomba, only better. What?
Two things. One, I loved your sound effect there, the wah for them closing. That was great. Also, what a week Elon Musk has had, right?
Right?
I mean, what he announces, the Tesla buses and vans. Now he's throwing stuff out there about creating robots.
Yes.
He's landing rockets. He's all over the place.
Here's a guy that talks about why it's so important. Jason Sebastian with SpaceX.
The reusability is not to be underemphasized. It's so huge. The big economic part of this whole rocket are the engines, and the ability to bring those back down to Earth and for them to not have gone through a huge cycle of burn and wear. And to be able to reuse them. I'm not sure if they'll reuse these actual engines. This was the first test, but that ability to do that is incredible economically and in terms of getting us to the next frontier.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, that was crazy to watch. You could just look it up and watch it, and it's just nuts. It just doesn't seem like it would be possible. All right, Concert for Carolina is a benefit show that Luke Combs and Eric Church, they're putting it on. They've sold 75,000 tickets in less than 7 hours. Wow. And some people even paid upwards of $1,600 each. Now, that's really good news for the people in North Carolina that were hurt by Hurricane Helene. And the show is actually on Saturday, October the 26th. They're going to have James Taylor make an appearance, Keith Urban, I was calling Urban, Bailey Zimmerman, and Sheryl Crow. So good for somebody for going out to do something for North Carolina.
Is this going to be in North Carolina as well?
That I don't know. Sue's News does not get down to the nitty-gritty. And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Okay, I did not know this either. Originally, Steven Spielberg was developing Cape Fear, and Martin Scorsese was developing Schindler's List. Neither of them were into their own projects, so they decided to trade, and that's what happened.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, that makes you kind of, I'm just kind of thinking about the implications if things would have worked in a different direction. Mm-hmm. You would have had, you know, I've mentioned this before. You can't do this, but as an experiment, it would be really cool to see, you know, what Martin Scorsese's version of that movie would be.
It would.
You can't spend $100 million just to compare and contrast, but that's fascinating. Uh-huh. It really is. Was that it?
That's it.
That is our random fact. Good job, Sue. Thank you very much. I have some amazing, I mean, this is, I tweeted this out yesterday. I said it's must-see TV. It really is. I'm a Bill Maher fan. The Reardon Roundtable was actually modeled after Politically Incorrect, which was a show that he did in the late 80s. And this monologue on Israel and Chapel Rowan is one of the best I've ever heard from Bill Maher. I'm going to cull it down. Coming up. Well, it is a manic Monday. I'm actually asking, I can't even believe, I don't even know myself anymore. I'm sitting in the studio asking Sue Thomas questions about my mums that I bought last week and whether I need to protect them tonight.
I think
because
that's a good sign.
Well, it's supposed to be the low 30s overnight. So I thought I saw 31. I just checked the weather app and it's always right, right?
Yeah.
It says 34 for the next two mornings, 59 for the high tomorrow. I guess tonight's low is 44, but Tuesday into Wednesday, 34, Wednesday into Thursday, 34, and 37 on Thursday into Friday. So it's going to be a little chilly. We got temperatures in the 70s for later in the week. This is fall. It's perfect fall weather. Today is a beautiful, beautiful day. So yesterday I was getting a little bit bored with the afternoon football games. I don't dabble in politics until usually Monday morning when it's time to start thinking about the show. I like to enjoy my weekends. But I came across something from Bill Maher and his show. He does a segment called New Rules that really I couldn't turn away from. And I would encourage those of you, especially if you have you know young kids in the house or grandkids that are Gen Z and you know pro-Hamas protesters, et cetera, to listen to what Bill has to say in this segment. And I thought it was really effective. So I couldn't turn away. It runs about 9 minutes. We're going to make it a little bit shorter here this afternoon so you can hear it. And hopefully it'll inspire you to go listen to the whole segment. Now, there's a singer out there by the name of Chapel Roan, who's kind of taken off a little bit and caught me off guard. I like to follow new music, but she's had a couple of hits and either was on SNL as a musical guest or is going to be and has become somewhat of a little phenom, right? Here's one of her songs. I like this one here. This is one of the first songs. Kind of a naughty, sexually theme song, though, as many of her songs are. And that kind of plays here in what Bill Maher has to say about Chapel Roan. So he does his segment the other night, and he wants to explain to people who the Pink Pony Club artist is. That's Chapel Roan. And he starts by saying, look, that's not the name. Chapel Roan is not the name of one of Trump's golf courses.
And finally, new rule, to mark the October 7th anniversary, we must launch a campaign to educate young Americans about the Middle East. And the way I'd like to begin that process is by addressing an open letter to Chapel Roan. Now, to those viewers who aren't watching this while also looking at their phones, let me explain.
I thought that was a funny line. So he gives the line about the Trump golf course.
She's actually a great new recording artist who, like a Hezbollah pager, is really blowing up.
Ouch. Ouch.
In just a few months, she went from a struggling artist to getting 3 billion plays on Spotify, netting her almost 11 cents.
Kind of true, right?
But here's what caught my eye. She seems like a Gen Zer who can be reached because I saw her on TMZ say,
it's like, obviously, f*** the policies of the right, but also f*** some of the policies on the left.
That sounds like something I would say.
That's kind of how he starts the segment. He, you know, and Bill always makes a little fun. And one of the things that's interesting about his segments is, and maybe we try to achieve some of this on this show as well, is he does use sharp wit and humor to make his point. And what happens with the audience that he has, because it's a studio audience, they're not sure sometimes on whether they should laugh or cheer or where he's going with some of this. But he was very pointed with Chapel.
She also said, I think it's important that people use critical thinking. I think it's important for me to question myself, question my algorithm, question, is some person that tweeted something about someone else even true? Preach, queer ally, preach. But then we get to Israel. And Chapel, this is where we must put to the test your pledge to use critical thinking and to question whether what you're reading on social media is true, because it isn't. There's a whole history of the Middle East that you and your fans aren't hearing about. So why don't you let me be your spirit guide through this?
So, you know, he started off having a little fun there, but he's very serious about what he is about to preach to his queer ally, Chapel Roan, in this segment of his show the other night.
I know you're moved by what you see on there. We all are, the dead Palestinian bodies. But it's odd that your generation didn't seem nearly as moved by the Jewish bodies on October 7th. You killed at Coachella this year, but when Hamas kills at a music festival, it's a whole other thing. Doesn't the sight of so many young women raped at a music festival make it a little personal?
So that's a very good question. She's at Coachella and some of these other music festivals doing her thing, talking about, you know, it's she's gay and her music is very lesbian themed, if you will, which is fine if that's what you want to do. But he makes some great points along those lines here in a second as well. But she...
Gen Z hearts are hardened by...
Let me go back to that.
At a music festival, make it a little personal.
Here we go.
My guess is that Gen Z hearts are hardened by the propaganda you see on TikTok, which likes to call the Jews colonizers. But colonizers are intruders who have no history in an area, like when Spain conquered the Mayans or when your mom took over Facebook.
No, he's always got to try to make a little fun there. But boy, does he give a great history lesson here on the Middle East.
When the Dutch took over South Africa, they had no history to the land. They just wanted it. But Israel is the Jews' homeland. And Jews have always lived there. I cap you not.
I didn't get the reference there, Sue. Did you get the reference
nope.
there? Okay. So some of these things are going to elude us just a little bit with Bill. There must have been some pop culture reference, maybe that's related to Chapel. So I lost that one.
You can look it up. It's in this book called The Bible, which is horribly wrong about sex ed, slavery, science, and cooking. But the archaeology checks out. It says the Jews built a temple with a really big wall 7 centuries before Muhammad or Islam ever existed, and sure as shit, you can still go there and touch it. Calling Jews colonizers in Israel is like calling Native Americans colonizers here. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's on Indigenous Peoples Day that he says that. Wait, Ethan tried to offer us an example of what that means. What does it
mean? The word cap is meant to brag or exaggerate, so I... Do not exaggerate.
Okay, but it's something that the kids are saying?
Oh, the kids are saying.
Okay, that's why he was doing that. Bill's not a fan of religion. He did a documentary about organized religion, so that's sort of where the Bible comment came from. But he was very effective in explaining to Chapel Roan. I would be very curious to see if Chapel Roan would take time to watch this, because it is harsh.
And there was never any Arab country called Palestine. It was an orphan province. And if you ask people what they thought about it back then, they'd say it gave them the ick. But after World War II, and after the Jews were very nearly wiped out by an actual attempted genocide, they decided it was time for their historic homeland to be an actual country, so that for once they could defend themselves. And the UN, we like them, right? Yeah, they agreed and voted a country for each of the indigenous peoples. One side agreed to that. But the Arabs had a slightly different proposal. They said, how about we keep it all and wipe you out?
Yeah, well, why don't we just eliminate the Jews, right? Now, his line about every once in a while, Bill and I are going to not agree, and he seems to think that people should like the UN. I'm not as big a fan as the UN, so we'll agree to disagree on that point.
Chapel, if you think it was repressive growing up queer in the Midwest, try the Mideast.
Here you go.
You're a female drag queen, and you sing, I f***ed you in the bathroom when we went to dinner, your parents at the table. Yeah, that wouldn't fly in Gaza, although you would straight off a roof. The same goes for knee-deep on the passenger seat and you're eating me out. Yeah, my guess is the morality police would figure out that one's not about the drive-thru.
So that's what's so ironic about some of the young people that think that Israel's the bad guy and that Hamas and the Palestinians are the good guy in all of this, because they haven't taken the time to learn the history. They haven't taken the time to think about the irony of some of the things and the behavior that they have while criticizing Israel, Chapel Roan, which is what Bill is trying to say here.
Chapel, you're not wrong that oppression is bad, or that Palestinian and many other Muslim populations are oppressed and deserve to be freed. You just have it completely ass backwards as to who is doing the oppressing. Hamas is a terrorist mafia that took over Gaza. The Revolutionary Guard is a terrorist mafia that took over Iran. ISIS is a terrorist mafia that took over Iraq. The Taliban is a terrorist mafia that took over Afghanistan. These are the oppressors. And when you make it all about Israel, you take the pressure off of them. You enable them. The Iranian regime has killed 600 protesters after a 22-year-old woman died in police custody following her arrest for the crime of wearing her head covering incorrectly.
Now, you haven't heard the young people protesting that one, have you? No, you haven't, right?
Just to be clear, that's your team. Iran is who sponsors Hamas and Hezbollah. Are you sure this is who you want to throw down with? Meryl Streep spoke at the UN recently and said this about the Taliban, who are only slightly more conservative than your heroes in Hamas. She said, today in Kabul, a female cat has more freedoms than a woman. A cat may go sit on her front stoop and feel the sun on her face. She may chase a squirrel into the park. A squirrel has more rights than a girl in Afghanistan today. A bird may sing in Kabul, but a girl may not. You're a singer, and you're advocating for a place and a culture you would never want to live under. Gender may not be binary, but right and wrong kind of is.
Well, gender is binary, too, but I think you understand Bill's point. Now, look, I don't typically like to play that much audio from a segment, but I thought it was so good, and I would wonder how many people would take the time to listen to it. I put it up on Twitter. Share that with your friends. That was so good, so effective. But wouldn't it be interesting to hear from Chapel Rowan and some of these other people that think that they know what they're talking about because they have been influenced by some of the nonsense and the propaganda on TikTok? I'd love to, you know, it would be, and this will never happen, but it would be interesting to see if someone would step up and say, you know what, I didn't know that. Thank you, Bill Maher, for educating me. I'm guessing it won't happen with Chapel Rowan and her audience, but that was really good from Bill Maher. It would have been audio cut of the day, but I got the SNL stuff for an hour from now, and that's really good, too. We're coming back with Cusimano on this Monday afternoon. Andy Puzder in the next hour. Talk a little bit about inflation and the economy. He's working on a new book right now. Former Senator Lamping as well. And an audio cut of the day right now. Frank Cusimano on a Monday afternoon. Damn, Jack Flaherty last night did pretty well for those L.A. Dodgers, didn't he? Although they're not faring very well this afternoon, Frank.
No, this series has no drama at all. Last night it was 9-0. Today it's 6-0 Mets. But yeah, you're right. Flaherty was out of sight, a two-hitter for 7 innings. His mom was in the stands. She tweeted out a photo of Jack as like a 12-year-old in a Dodger uniform. You know, I once got in trouble because I said that, you know, Flaherty, when it's at the end of his Cardinal contract, you know he wants to go back to L.A. And then he kind of like confronted me and somebody in the organization. So what are you saying that for? Well, where is he pitching now and where is he going to sign in the offseason? He's going to end up in L.A.
Did that really happen where you got scolded for that? That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't.
No, I get it. I get it. By the way, Max Muncy hit a home run, so it's 6-1. The other series starts tonight, though, right?
Yes, Guardians and Yankees. I think the Yankees had too much firepower, but Cleveland's been a great story all season long. Should be a fun series.
All right, I'm going to say go Tribe on that one. How about the Tigers? They get back on track, although they weren't playing a very good team. But that's what you needed in Massachusetts over the weekend, Frank, for Mizzou to get back on track. Now, you got Auburn coming in this weekend for homecoming.
Yeah, it was interesting because Coach Drink told the team before the game, this is the smallest crowd that any Mizzou team has played in front of, I think he said, since 1967. There were about 8,000. I talked to Brady Cook last night. He felt it was like a Chaminade CBC high school game, and there wasn't any problem in getting in the signals. I thought the takeaway from that game was what happened late. Missouri has a weapon. His name is Brett Norfley. He is a 6'7", 255-pound tight end. He's an unbelievable athlete. He could be a Division I baseball player. I saw him hit towering home runs at Francis Howell. They got him involved. Now, he was banged up all summer. He got injured the first game. He hasn't been healthy. Now he is. They've been putting in a lot more stuff for him. Keep an eye on Brett Norfleet, their towering tight end.
Is Luther, did he get hurt, some shoulder injury or what?
He did. He took a real bad collision in the third quarter, came down hard on his shoulder. His dad told me before the game ended, and his dad has an in with the assistant coach or the trainer, that he's going to be fine. Drink will make it official tomorrow. And Brady seemed to think that he was going to be all right. I don't think it's serious.
You know, I stumbled into that Illinois-Purdue game late on Saturday, and holy moly, that was a thriller, right? And then Purdue decides it's overtime. Purdue scores. Illinois scores. They go up. I think it was 50-43. Purdue scores 50-49. They go for two, which you often do if you're on the road. That's sort of the rule. Didn't work out for them. Illinois escapes with a victory.
Yeah, they have quietly been, well, I wouldn't say quietly because their games have been so exciting, but they have snuck up on everybody. I mean, they're up to number 22 in the country in the AP poll, so that's awesome to see. Brett Bielema won a ton of games at Wisconsin, didn't win as many at Arkansas, but he's a heck of a coach.
Yeah, you know, I have to give them their due because I've watched them play a couple of times this season, and they're a really good team. Now, Mizzou in the rankings, they move up just a little bit. They have Auburn this weekend. They're only, I think, 6.5-point favorites, but that is a game that you don't want to stumble on coming into this weekend because you got more important games down the road with Tuscaloosa just around the corner in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't think Auburn's real good. I mean, they played some teams close, but they are 2-4. You must win this homecoming game on Saturday morning at 11 a.m., which I plan on attending. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get up. It doesn't help that it's like an early game because I like going to the parade and stuff like that. But the parade has got to be like 7:30 in the morning or something ridiculous like that. But I'm going to try to make it up there. We'll see what the weather does for this weekend, Frank.
Yep. And then tomorrow night, the Blues and the home opener. I understand the video they're going to play before the game, if you're going to the game, is just like heart-stopping, emotional. Chris Zimmerman said it actually made him cry. Now, the Blues know how to put together a presentation. They know how to stage big events, and the home opener is a big one. And there's got to be some momentum, too, because you have three games out west, and they staged three magnificent comebacks. They come back with 4 points. They almost tied Vegas in Vegas, but like most people who go to Las Vegas, they come home empty in terms of points. But I'll take the 4 points in a three-game span.
Hey, by the way, College Hoops is about to start. They had the new poll that came out today. Not a real surprise. KU was picked number one. But look at Alabama. All of a sudden, they're a basketball school as well. They were number two.
And, you know, there is a little bit of an Alabama connection with St. Louis University. Josh Schertz and Nate Oates, the head coach at Alabama, are extremely close, and they exchange practice video almost like every other day because Oates subscribes to the same theory that Schertz does. Listen closely. It's only going to be about making threes and dunks and layups. They will not allow twos to be shot for the most part. And like a perfect game is like 33 shot and, you know, 20 dunks and layups. And those two are both on the same wavelength. And Oates has done an incredible job at Alabama.
That is really interesting. Mizzou, of course, does not even come close to get any votes in the top 25. However, having said that, I think this is a team that will be in the top 25 by the beginning of next year in January.
That's a bold prediction for a team that didn't win a game in 2024. But I will agree with you. The talent level is really good, and I think they're going to be fine. They've lightened up the schedule a little bit. They got some tough teams, but I would not be surprised if they have a pretty good record heading into the conference
season. Look, you got your peeps and sources in Columbia. I got my own. I'm hearing really good things from Dennis Gates and the crew as they start to practice. So I'm going to keep my hopes up. Frank, have a great weekend. We'll talk on Friday.
All right.
Get more at 971talk.com. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I always like to let this one run a little.
Love it.
Sue and I like this one from The Who, Don't Let Go of the Coat. You can always check out the bumper music on the X formerly Twitter, at Mark Reardon KFTK. I post the list each and every evening when I'm working. We did not have a list for Friday because Ryan Recker was here. I got a good one for 5:45. Every once in a while,
good.
I dig a little deeper into the catalog.
I love it.
And this is a little deeper dive into Toto, believe it or not. So it's not Hold the Line.
You know I love Toto.
It's not Africa. It's a different song. You challenge you to come up with that song between now and a half an hour from now. We'll see if you can do it. This is, by the way, I have great audio today. Mondays are kind of tough just because I never know if I can get to everything, and sometimes it's a little harder. But over the weekend, Jennings has blown up into this thing, Sue.
Yes, he has.
And I've known Scott for, 7 or 8 years now, even though our mutual friend Joe Arnold and I go back 30 years. And ironically, when I used to listen to Joe on the radio when he was on WHAS in Louisville, Scott was his news guy. Like, in the middle of the night, he was his news guy. And then Joe's like, yeah, remember that guy that used to do news with me? He's a political consultant. He runs campaigns, and he's on CNN. And this was kind of like the infancy days of him getting some appearances on CNN. So over the weekend, he sends me this this article. You know, our friend, some of this gets cross-pollinated, if you will. Our friend David Strom from HotAir.com, right? He's a regular guest, David is, and he does a part for HotAir.com, which is called Things I Like. Okay, so he finds something that he likes, and it might be in pop culture, might be a movie, might be something like that. So this weekend, and Jennings sent this to me, of course, Things I Like, Scott Jennings on CNN. And he kind of goes on and on and on, and then he, includes the clips. There's a guy out there, I don't even know who this guy is, at Grage Dustin, and he tweets out a clip from Jennings that says, on this episode of At Scott Jennings, Kentucky Saves the World, and this was the line. I just think this is brilliant, by the way.
A lot of men think Democrats care more about dudes who want to become women than dudes who just want to be dudes.
Well,
and no hunting, cosplay, or cringy videos is going to change if the bed is made.
Oh, that was a great line. That was a great line. Abby Phillips, they all go nuts. They can't handle him. He will be here, Fred, on Wednesday, right? Right. Jenny's is going to join us on Wednesday. On the presidential race, just to throw this in here as well, because we're going to talk with Andy Puzder about the economy and the race as well. But there's a lot of people that think that the polling is looking very good for Trump right now. It really is. And Harris seems to be floundering a bit. But Larry Sabato talked about maybe Trump even underperforming in some of these polls.
The better pollsters, the ones who are willing to spend money to do their job better and not be embarrassed, take into account people who were hiding from the pollsters, who favored Donald Trump disproportionately in 2016 and 2020. And that's a good thing. Here's the bad news, because I've talked to many of the pollsters about this. They have no idea if it's going to work this time either.
Yeah, that's what we don't know. But I do think that some of the Trump support is being undercounted, but some of this stuff gets so goofy, you just don't know. What I do know is that there's panic on the part of the Democrats. You can kind of see it. You can see the legacy media members fire off in angry ways against Vance yesterday, Martha Raddatz and Kristen Welker, right? You can see it in where Kamala is doing the campaign appearances. Look, they're worried about Michigan and Wisconsin and these Senate races right now, which is very interesting. Andy Puzder is back with us, former CEO of CKE Restaurants, the chair of the Second Vote Value Investments Group, and the board member of the Jobs Creator Network, and of course, he's got strong ties to Wash U here and St. Louis. How are you, Andy? Welcome back. How are you on this Monday afternoon?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk about the economy and where we are with the economy. Do you think, let me just start with a broad question here, because we know what Jay Powell did in the Fed. Are we heading toward a recession, in your opinion, as an economist, or not?
Well, if you look at this from the perspective of just regular Americans, people that are out there going to the gas station, going to the grocery store, trying to pay their bills, trying to buy houses. I think we're not only are we going to be in a recession, but we have been in a recession for quite a while. You know, normal people don't pay attention to every jobs number that comes out. They don't pay attention necessarily to the GDP numbers that come out quarterly. They go to the grocery store, they go to the gas station, they look at their paychecks and they look at the cost of things, and they make a determination as to whether or not they're better off or worse off than they were previously. And for the past 4 years, it's been straight downhill for the American people. And I think they are experiencing a recession, whether or not we technically have a recession.
You know, it seems that way because, you know, I think that, and you hear this from President Trump and J.D. Vance in particular, that I think people still are struggling. The one thing that always pops for me, Andy, and I don't know how this manifests itself, but I consider myself maybe a part-time economist. I'm not as good as you, but I look at different things. And the one number that has really been dramatically different than from 4 years ago, when we were in the pandemic, you know, the amount of household debt was at, I think it was an all-time low. Now we're in the opposite. So people are still acting maybe like we're not in a recession. They're spending like we're not in a recession. And that money's going on the credit cards. And that's going to come back to haunt people, I think, and haunt this U.S. economy, isn't it?
Yeah, the savings rate is extremely low. We've spent through the pandemic savings. People have run up a credit card debt to highs we've never seen before. It's over $1 trillion in credit card debt. And that's at these very high interest rates that you're now paying on credit cards. People have even started cashing in their 401k plans. People have been drawing on the 401k plans, even with the penalties that they incur when they do so. So just to meet everyday expenses, just to live the life they've become used to living, people are having to go into extreme debt and use the resources that they've compiled over their lifetimes. So this is a very bad time for Americans. And I think you see it in the polling on the economy. You see it in the reaction that both Kamala Harris and Joe Biden get when they get in front of anything other than a friendly crowd. And in fact, I don't know if you saw it, there was a video circulating of President Obama addressing a crowd in Michigan yesterday, and very loud protest using a profanity just with respect to the name Joe Biden. People are just fed up. They're just tired. And they're ready for something new. Now, Harris has been trying to convince people that she's something new, which is it's kind of strange. She's campaigning for her. She has Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton. I mean, that's really not, I mean, you talk about something that's not new. I mean, these guys two of them are clearly not new, and Obama certainly had his time in office.
Did you see Clinton? Did you actually see it? He looks awful.
Yeah, I did.
He sounds awful. I didn't even know. I was talking about this earlier. When I first saw the clip with Clinton on Twitter this morning, I didn't have the audio up, and I'm like, who is that guy? And I couldn't believe how old he looks. So, yeah, I don't know what they think. They got Hillary out there trying to help her. Is that a good idea? I mean, I welcome it.
Well, it's a good idea for Trump.
Right.
It's not a good idea for Harris. They're as you said just a moment ago, they're very scared right now. They've spent a tremendous amount of money. They've spent two or three times as much as Trump has spent. And even if you watch Fox News, you're seeing these Harris ads one after the other. And so they've spent a tremendous amount of money, and the only way the needle has moved is against her. The needle has moved down. It hasn't moved up in her favor. So they're scared. They're nervous, and they should be, because this is the time when you want to surge. This is the time when you want to start. You want to get the momentum right now, because we're really just weeks away from the election, and of course, people are voting already, so you're already maybe benefiting from the surge. But the final election day is, I think, November 4th or 5th, and we're very close to that.
It's hard for me to believe that if this is a change election, and you know, Harris and Walz have tried to make it maybe a change election, even in their own way, even though there wouldn't be a change because she said very definitively that she has no issues with what Joe Biden has done and maybe wouldn't act any differently. But I guess I call it down to the fact that there's a lot of people out there that have suffered, that don't have cash because they've run out of it. And by the way, I think that some of this, and I don't know where this lands us, but Andy, most people, if they're in a cash crunch, what do? They refinance their home, right? If they have equity, and then they get the cash that way. Well, that's why they're going to the credit cards, because everyone's got 3.2 or 3.5 on their loans, and they don't want to refi higher, so they're getting into trouble with that, which I think is going to really end up being a bad thing for the economy. But it's just hard for me to believe that if you're asking the question, are you better off 4 years ago than you were, that 90% of the people out there are going to say, yeah, you know what, I was better off under Trump.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, look, you had the lowest unemployment rate in history for every race and both sexes. You had family income hit historic highs. You had poverty hit historic lows. And you had income inequality decline, all while wages, real wages, that's inflation-adjusted wages, increase. And it all happened with extremely low inflation. Now, those are very macroeconomic things, but they impacted everybody's life. And how you could say you were better off today than you were 4 years ago, unless you're very rich. I think the rich have done just fine under Joe Biden. The stock market's done well, and real estate assets have increased in value. So if you're wealthy and you have assets, you've probably done pretty well. For the middle class, the working class, it's been a disaster, and it's not going to change. Harris says, as you pointed out, Harris said, I don't know one thing I would have done differently when it comes to Afghanistan, when it comes to the border, when it comes to the economy. She couldn't think of one thing she would do differently. So now we know. We know who she is, and we know where she's coming from.
So where are you? One of the things I don't think we've ever talked about, and I do have some concerns here when I hear Trump and Vance talking about the tariffs, but where is Andy Puzner on the issue of the tariffs and what Trump did the last time and what might happen here? Because obviously Harris and the Democrats are saying, look, that's a tax increase on the American people because that's going to increase the cost of goods. We all love our cheap stuff from Walmart, right? So your thoughts on that?
It's just baloney. Look, Trump put tariffs in, very strong tariffs against China. It generated significant income, tariff income, and Joe Biden could have canceled them at any time. He could have gotten rid of those tariffs. The Biden-Harris administration could have eliminated the Trump tariffs from his first term. They didn't eliminate them. Actually, they just increased them. They put a very stiff tariff on electric vehicles being imported from China. That's because in certain circumstances, tariffs are a good idea. If a country is subsidizing an industry with the intent of destroying an industry in America, it makes perfect sense for the government to stand up and say, you need to stop. We're not going to let you destroy our businesses and take our jobs. So there are circumstances where tariffs make sense. National defense is another area where tariffs make sense. President Trump, when he spoke in front of the New York Economic Club a few weeks ago, said, look, we get parts from our F-16s that come from countries that are our enemies. That can't continue. We have to be able to manufacture these products in the United States. So we have to be able to meet the needs of our defense system so that we can defend our country. So there are very many circumstances where tariffs make sense. And the last point is,
One thing you should always know about President Trump, whenever he talks, he's negotiating. And he's already set himself up so that when he comes in, if he's positioning himself so when he negotiates with other countries with respect to tariffs they have on American goods, he will be in a better position than any president who's ever served, including himself, his last term. He set himself up to negotiate great deals for us. I'd hate to see it go to waste, and I hate to see this criticism from the left when the tariffs he put in place, they didn't even rescind.
Yeah, well, that's a good point as well. I guess my main concern moving forward is what, because this isn't even being discussed, the tax breaks, because they automatically sunset, right, into next year. So Congress is going to have to do something. I think the legacy media is letting Harris and Walz completely off the hook, as we kind of knew that they would, because she's been out there saying that they're going to pull back all those. That means a tax increase for everybody in this country.
Yeah, just if the Trump tax cuts expired, working and middle class Americans will see their taxes go up, and wealthy Americans will see the tax rate they have to pay on their income go up. They won't see the taxes they pay go up. They're actually paying much higher taxes now. They're paying about 45% of all income tax collected. That's the top 1%, pays about 45%. During the Obama administration, before the Trump tax cuts, they paid about 38% of all income taxes. So when you lower tax rates on wealthy people, they realize more income and they pay more in taxes. When you raise the rates on wealthy people, they defer income and don't pay as much in taxes. Middle class and working class individuals under the Trump tax cuts all got tax cuts, and they will see Harris can't keep just part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in effect and let the part that applies to the top 10% expire. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is a single bill. If it expires as it's set to in 2025, everybody will see their taxes go up.
Don't you think she's getting completely left off the hook on this particular issue? She unveils this in August. She's talking about this, you know, this plan, tax relief for more than 100 million middle class and lower income Americans. How about just keeping the Trump tax cuts in place? That would provide a lot of relief, but nobody follows up. Has that been asked one time in a debate or with, you know, any of these interviews so far, the few that she's done? Nobody has pressed them on that.
It's hard to tell what happened in the CBS, the 60 Minutes interview, because they took answers from one question and applied it to a different question, and they edited things out. But I will say that the journalist who did that interview did try and press her on these taxes a little bit.
Yeah.
He's the only one. And she said, well, she was, you know, how are you going to raise these taxes if the Republicans, are going to end up very likely in control of the Senate? And she had no answer.
Yeah, right.
But she's going to do an interview with Brett Baer tomorrow. Maybe Brett will ask her. I hope he will ask her.
Well, you know, we talked about that earlier, Danny. You're right.
She's
going to probably, I'm shocked that she's doing that interview, because I think she's going to be pressed in a way that she really has. And I'll give Whitaker a little credit, because he seemingly did, you know, follow up. That's something that's been, the legacy media has been unwilling to do, ask a follow-up question. We've seen that in the debates. But I do think that this could be interesting with Brett. And doesn't that kind of tell you that they're a little, it reeks of a little desperation there, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they've agreed. Other than they're desperate, I don't know why they would agree to do an interview with Brett Baer on Fox News right now. I think that she hopes she's going to be able to show that she's competent, she can handle this interview, and I'm sure that no matter what happens to her, the press will praise her performance. And I don't know that Brett Baer is one who's going to push her particularly hard, but I hope he will be more of a journalist than anybody else who's interviewed him so far.
I think he will.
And will ask her tougher questions and hope that and hope he will press her to answer those tough questions.
I think Brett is one of the best out there, and he asks good questions. So I have
very good.
Yeah, I have high hopes for this. Andy, great to have you on. We'll see what happens in 3 weeks.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you soon.
I am kind of baffled, though, by the whole thing with this announcement that she's going to sit down with Brett Baer. I don't get it. By the way, on this Indigenous Peoples Day, let's hear from Kamala from the past.
People did not want to deal and accept and, most importantly, admit that we are the scene of a crime when it comes to what we did with slavery and Jim Crow and institutionalized racism in this country.
When she gets to Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day. This is an older clip, by the way.
And we have to be honest about that. We have to be honest. We have to be honest.
Sue, we have to be honest.
I'm not sure if we do.
We should. We should be honest.
Okay.
Because if we're not honest, we are, one, not going to deal with the vestiges of all of that harm. And we're not going to correct course. And we're not going to be true to our values and our morals. And so, similarly, when it comes to indigenous Americans, the indigenous people.
Here we go.
There is a lot of work that we still have to do. And I appreciate and applaud your point and your effort, and count me in on support.
Yes, count her in on support. I love this. Libs of TikTok tweeted this out earlier. Columbus is evil. He stole land. Therefore, we no longer celebrate him. Instead, we celebrate Stone Age tribes that ate people, sacrificed children, and also stole land. That was great. Really was. Good line from them. We're coming back. Well, I've compiled a good selection of audio with the help of our new producer, Ethan Hannaford, of the SNL bit from the other night, with former cast members doing a lot better than current cast members, playing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And also, yeah. I mean, Andy Samberg as Doug Emhoff was just epic. It really was. So that will be featured in Audio Cut of the Day coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Right now, this guy's going to spend a lot of time with us on election night in 3 weeks. Former State Senator John Lamping, a Reardon Roundtable veteran, with us this afternoon, talk a little politics, some local politics as well. John, how are you this afternoon?
I couldn't be better, Mark. What a beautiful Monday, huh?
It is absolutely gorgeous. See the picture of my daughter's deer over the weekend?
I did. Congratulations.
Yeah, she did pretty well. Now, as I told the audience, I shared this earlier, her... we can only shoot does this weekend. It was like a special doe season. And Friday afternoon, she had a big buck just staring us down for like 8 minutes. So she had to pay her dues, John, but that's all part of deer hunting, right?
That's right. That's cool. Congratulations. I know that she's put a lot of effort into it, and it's exciting that she's successful so early in life. She's certainly hooked for life.
Absolutely, and I'm excited. I tried to get my boys hooked and didn't work with them, but she's been driving this one completely. Let's talk some politics. I want to get to the presidential scene in just a moment, but there is a state Senate race that I'd like to focus in on here in the next couple of weeks because it's a pretty important one. It's former State Rep David Gregory against Democrat Joe Pereles, and that's the 15th district seat that was held, John, by Andrew Koenig, right? But he term limited out.
That's right. It's really interesting. You know, during this cycle here in Missouri, you know, there's obviously we have Amendment 3 in the ballot, and, you know, kind of everyone's kind of angling for how is Amendment 3 going to change the trajectory of some race out there. And it's this district, Senate District 15, Ground Zero is kind of Chesterfield. I think this is the one that's going to have the greatest impact. The Amendment 3 is going to have the greatest impact on. And, you know, for us, I used to live in St. Louis County, long lifetime Republican, and this is really the last state Senate seat that could be primarily in St. Louis County. So it's shaping up to be quite a barn burner.
So this is, you mentioned abortion. That's a big part of this. This Pereles guy, and I don't know him at all, he's hammering Gregory in ads. There's a lot of PAC money that's coming in. They are claiming that he wrote the state's current abortion ban. And the campaign has fired back. Look, they want these TV stations to stop playing that ad because they think it's deceptive and untrue. What would you say to that?
Well, I think it's kind of fair game in the 21st century. I mean, most of the television campaigns or ads are outright lies. So this one's close enough to where it's not coming down, that's for sure. So what's interesting here is the candidate, Joe Pereles, is a very good candidate. So what happens in every state Senate cycle, if possible, the Democrats try to find a great candidate, and then the Republicans try to find a seat that really should be Democrat, that they, if they put enough money into it, can keep it. And that's a little bit like this time around, where David Gregory is a very good candidate, but he was in the House long enough and he aspired to be a statewide candidate that he really worked hard on lots of issues that are good for statewide Missouri, but not necessarily so good for suburban St. Louis. You know, Joe Pereles is an accomplished business executive who worked for the Drury Corporation. The Drury family is a very big donor to conservative causes. I don't know where they are in this race. And so this will be the marquee race. This will be where both sides will probably spend over $1 million. And there's even a more special significance. So Missouri Senate is 34 seats. And so if you hold 24 of the 34, you have a supermajority in the Senate. And so just to put it in context, in 2010, when I took office, I was the 26th senator, 26-8. Well, we're down to 24-10, and the district in Columbia, Caleb Rowden's district, will be going to Stephen Weber, a Democrat. And if the Democrats can win this 15th district, then the Republicans in the Senate will not have a supermajority. So it is it's really significant in Jeff City levels. And then I do think that this is the one race that Amendment 3 is going to play out. You know, as much as Ray Hartman would like to knock off Ann Wagner on the issue, this one's going to have an impact.
I think it might also, and then, you know, you've done a great job here of painting the landscape and how that could potentially, you know, change if this one, and I didn't know that, so Caleb's seat, that's pretty much a done deal. Did the not a worthy Republican emerge from that primary?
No, Stephen Weber is a very formidable political person. Rowden was able to beat him 8 years ago when I think we spent $2.2 million and, you know, Rowden, was a very moderate senator, so it's not like he propped up the conservative side of that district. And Stephen Weber is going to cruise to a very easy victory there. There's a Democrat held seat in Kansas City that there's a chance Republicans could take it. If Republicans have a very good night, it's currently held by a Democrat. It's more the moderate seat. But really, the marquee state Senate race is right here in the 15th. And think about this, Mark. Like, this is, Jane Cunningham had this seat. John Loudon had this seat. Eric Schmidt had part of the seat. You know, you always had the more often than not, you had the most conservative,
right?
Republican in the county because it was such an overwhelmingly Republican seat. Last time around, when Koenig won it 8 years ago, the district lost to Trump. I think Trump barely cleared it, and Kanan was a great ground guy. But this time around, they've got a good candidate and they've got good issues.
Well,
and like I said, the fact that David set himself up to run statewide, not to run suburban St. Louis County.
But what I hear from you here, just kind of, you know, listening through the tea leaves here, is that it sounds like Gregory's in trouble here.
Well, I think for me, like, you know, we're going to do election coverage that night, and I think this is kind of canary in the coal mine. I think if we watch this state Senate seat, we'll get a lot of indications about how well Amendment 3 is or isn't doing. My understanding with Amendment 3 is that everyone in St. Louis County is all jazzed up about it, but the rest of the state, including the blue areas, are not so much so. So it may be that Amendment 3 somehow does not win, but I think that's the seat, you know, as the night goes on that night, I'll be watching the vote count in that district. As a way, not just for the race itself, but maybe an indicator of how overwhelmingly Amendment 3 is passing in St. Louis County.
Absolutely. And John, I'm glad you just mentioned that. He's going to spend some time with me, quality time on election night as we do our coverage here in a few weeks. So let me kind of move to the national election right now. You and I have talked throughout this campaign. We get to this period, as I've sort of described last week in August, where things weren't seemingly going very well for Trump. Look, the media was all in on Harris after Biden gets out. She has the convention. You know, it's the rah-rah. You know, all that stuff lasts until about mid September, and then things start to turn because people start to get to know the Democrats in this ticket. And, you know, I think things have swung in a really positive direction for Trump. Carl Cannon said something when he was with me last Thursday that certainly resonated. And John, you would remember this certainly from, you know, 2016. Trump had some stumbles even in 2016 in September, but he closed extremely strong. And that seemingly is what's happening right now.
Yeah, I checked my calendar. You and I spoke on October 3rd. It was a few days after the VP debate. And I think that was the first time where both of us, and I certainly felt that the tide had turned, that it felt like things were moving back towards Trump. And I think, you know, that's 11 days ago. And I think every day since then, not only has Trump gotten better and stronger and disciplined, I don't think we've seen a candidate implode the way she's imploding. It seems like every day there's the new clip. I mean, if you've seen the clip about her and condemning Columbus Day, and then this Christopher Rufo article about her plagiarizing a book she co-wrote in 2009, it's like every day that every time she does an interview, people get to know her that much more. And you know, my understanding is in generic ballots for the first time in over 20 years, Republicans are ahead of Democrats all across the country. So I can't wait. You know, we're coming up, but 3 weeks from tomorrow, and I think all indications seem to think that it's going to be one of two things, either a very good night or a historically good night.
So, you know, the Wall Street Journal, I mentioned this earlier in the show, the Wall Street Journal did a piece over the weekend about the gender issue and the sports issue with biological men competing against women in particular. This is something, obviously, Trump's been talking about. J.D. Vance, a lot of us have been talking about for a long time. I've been frustrated, John, that this is not part of a debate, that the moderators are too afraid to ask that question because they know where the majority of the American people are. But I can't help but think, and I saw a lot of ads. Look, Harris has been running a lot of polished ads. I mentioned that. But I saw these gender ads over the weekend when I'm watching college football and NFL, and they're going to resonate with people. They're going to resonate with middle-of-the-road voters for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's you don't even need ads to have it resonate. I think that men know the Democratic Party is more interested in dudes that want to become women than dudes that want to be dudes. I think I'm quoting what's his name from CNN, who comes on your show,
Scott Jennings. Jennings.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's too late. I think that the Democrat, and look, let's be honest, the Democratic Party really isn't interested in white men at all, and then they're interested in black men when it comes time
for
election time, and it's too late. They can't turn it around. I guess if you send Tim Walz out, you know, have him do a little bit more hunting. And just think about it. Your daughter can hunt circles around Tim Walz.
Oh my God, she already can, and she's only 9 and a half. You know, I by the way, did you see? I'm going to play some of this here for audio cut of the day. But did you see Saturday Night Live on Saturday with Dana Carvey and Jim Gaffigan and Maya Rudolph again? Because look, they're pretty damn funny. Now, when they try to impersonate Trump and Vance, it falls flat. But the mocking of the president and this ticket has been very effective. Finally, it only took them 6 years to get there, but it was really funny.
I think about it. It's just 3 weeks ago when they first came on, they had Dana Carvey come back on and do Joe Biden. And think about it. It took 3.5 years, all the material, all the laughs that could have been had. And they've done more in 3 weeks than they did in 3.5 years.
There is no doubt.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Lorne Michaels should be ashamed of themselves for letting go. There was so much great material there, and they didn't touch it because they thought that they had to be, I don't know, they didn't want to give Trump a window to come back into the scene, and they failed on that front as well. By the way, John, here's another bit of history I heard earlier that you probably know, and I hadn't really given much thought to it, but maybe this does have an effect. It's been since Martin Van Buren, outside of George Herbert Walker Bush, when a vice president has won the White House. Now, that's rather stunning, isn't it? Obviously, Gerald Ford gets there from, a different reason. But, with a vice president in an administration that's not popular, hard for me to believe that she can win this thing.
Well, she's not going to win this thing unless somebody does something really egregious with respect to, ballot integrity. It's not surprising. We're a country of change. The way a constitutional republic works, the way it works in practice is you kind of go back and forth and you go to the right a little bit, to the left a little bit, you find compromise. And, after 4 or 8 years of one approach to governing, the country is usually ready to see what the other side has to say, what might be their opportunity. And secondly, to sit around for 4 or 8 years as a vice president waiting for the opportunity to run for president, it's just not a very good thing to be doing. It doesn't create a lot of momentum going forward. I'd be curious to see if Trump and Vance are only there for 4 years, if J.D. doesn't assert himself more specifically into the administration, take on a role that he wouldn't otherwise take on. But having said that, think about all the young men and women that will be available to run for office in 4 year time. So maybe J.D. will break the mold. She's not going to do it. I mean, think about this, Mark. I was going back and forth with our friend Jane today. Kamala Harris she's never been voted for. No one's ever voted for Kamala.
Yeah.
In the primaries in 2024. So Jane will finally have her chance to vote for Kamala. I'm sure she's been waiting all these years to do it. But anyway, she's...
Believe me, they're not that excited. They just hate Trump. All right, Lampy, great to talk with you. Have a great week. We'll talk. Enjoy that weather, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Take care.
Oh, yeah. A little new Toto for you here this afternoon. Do you know this song, Sue?
Wait.
I'll Supply the Love.
No way.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't heard this one in a little while.
This makes me happy.
I was inspired today for sure. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to Spotify. I can just kind of adding it right now.
I can just play the whole damn song, probably. I love me some
awesome.
Toto every once in a while. But you know what? We got to do this, unfortunately. Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, so look, Saturday Night Live started a couple of weeks ago. The new season, they had, Maya Rudolph come in and play Kamala Harris. Finally, they decided to get funny.
Exactly.
Dana Carvey is doing Biden. Epic. They brought Andy Samberg back to do Doug Emhoff, Kamala's husband. And they have, who am I missing here? I am missing one person here.
Who?
Well, we're going to find out because
Walls?
We're going to play. Yeah, Tim Walz,
yes,
Jim Gaffigan. Sorry. So they played the Family Feud on SNL. Whoop, that didn't work, did it? Well, we're not going to be able to use that clip. We're having the worst...
We are. It's just a Monday.
The worst problem with... okay, I don't think I'm going to be able to execute this. I'll try. One of the things that I told you earlier was they were very funny on the Democrats, but on the Trump side of the equation, it kind of sucked. Uh-oh, this is not going to work at all, is it?
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Hold on, here comes Ethan.
Nope, none of it's going to work. This happens every once in a while with this computer, and I have no idea why it happens, but unfortunately, audio cut of the day is going to be the Toto song, Sue.
Well, it's a good one.
Because I got nothing else.
It's a good one.
Yeah, well, we're just going to have to go with that, unfortunately. Man, that was going to be so good.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. I fell flat twice today because we had issues with the monologue. I had audio issues there. I couldn't hear what I was trying to play. So that sucked. Good start for a Monday. Then audio cut of the day sucked. So I guess what you can say is I've come full circle on this show. It sucked from the start. It sucked at the end. We'll try to do better tomorrow. Have a great Monday night.
Get more at 971talk.com. Get more at 971talk.com.